How's it, everybody? Welcome back for another episode. You're here with me, Nick, and I'm joined by my buddy Ronald. How's it going there, man?
Yeah, why don't you? Much better for me than it is for Warren Gatland.
Yo, that's true. We're definitely going to be delving into the Gat story during the show here. That news breaking today. But Ronnie, tell me, you had a bit of a snake problem there by the Braai, allegedly. You know, I didn't see any photos of this snake, nor did any of the boys in the group, but apparently you had one.
You know, I've just decided, like, I don't need to prove anything to anyone anymore. So there was a snake. You can believe me, don't believe me. I also mowed the lawn this holiday. Believe me, don't believe me.
Yeah, I definitely don't believe you. Pictures or we don't believe you. So sorry, Ronald, but you did send us a photo.
Hey, don't apologize. Don't apologize. It doesn't affect me in any way that you do not believe me.
That's okay. It's much like your super group position. No one believes that you're any good there because you're simply not.
Right.
Yeah, Ronnie. So it was a busy weekend. A lot of Six Nations rugby on. I say a lot. There's only three fixtures that come when the Six Nations plays. A little URC action that we'll delve into as well. But let's take a first look at our Super Brew rankings because I climbed up about 200 spots up to 605th. Where are you sitting on the log, Ronnie? And don't bullshit us because this one will be pictures or I don't believe you.
Once again, you don't have to believe me. It doesn't affect me.
It may not affect you, but it certainly affects your Super Brew ranking.
You know, I'm not prepared to tell you. I'm not prepared, and I don't know what my Super Brew ranking is. All I know is that, what did you say on last week's podcast between Scotland and Ireland, who was going to win?
I definitely said Ireland was going to win.
Well, you didn't, and you lied, and I know you want to give me grief about Super Brew. But at least I backed the pick that I made and I didn't lie to people. You actually lied to people.
So how did I lie, Ronnie?
Well, you said Scotland were going to win.
Did I?
That was going to be your Super Brew prediction.
Yeah, I have to admit to that one. I did talk Scotland up in the week. I was really hopeful for it. But yeah, when it came down to brass tacks, I couldn't put my money where my mouth was.
And why is that? Why do we say Scotland, but then go and back Ireland? Is it because we know that Scotland is a minnow nation masquerading as a top 10?
Yeah, that's a tough call. And I think a lot of it for me had to do with them missing Tui Pilatu. And also just, it's hard to see a team that's doing well flopping in a game like that. You know, they were at Murrayfield that favored the Scots a little bit. But when it comes down to it, player for player, history versus history, 10-match losing streak, you're like, you know, I've got to go to the side of Ireland. What about you, Ronald? You actually picked Scotland by one.
Well, I'll be honest with you, I did want to change it. And I sat down Sunday trying to change it. And much like I'm doing right now while we're talking, because I'm having issues with my Super Brew. Every time I try and open anything, there's error that comes up. But I am in touch with the people. But anyway, so Sunday I tried to change it, actually, and I also decided, you know, there's no way Scotland's going to win. And then when I was having the issues, I thought, you know what, just stick with your gut. I'm going to be so disappointed. I'm going to be more disappointed if Scotland go end up winning and I changed my call than, you know, than I actually am right now, having stuck with Scotland. So, yeah, it is unfortunate that Scotland, because Scotland is a team I want to win and I don't want them to lose and suck. There's other teams I want to suck rather than Scotland.
So, you know, if you were watching that game and you closed your eyes, for a second you may have thought you were watching the rugby championship. James Lowe, Duan Vandamova, you know, all the try scorers there. So, yeah, it was an interesting one. But I think a big shout-out must go to forward pass, Thurston Whittle. He climbed 23 spots on Super Brew this week, taking pole position. He's in first place on 11 points. So well done to forward pass, something the French are all too familiar with at the moment.
Like it. So if you want to know, I am 930th in Super Brew.
You know what? That's so cuck. I don't even need a photo. I know you're telling the truth.
You know what, I've just decided it's better to just be honest. Like, I win so much anyways that, you know, proof is in my record.
Oh, there we go. Well, we'll let you have that hollow victory there, Ronald. So Six Nations log at the moment, this is really the week that's sort of blown the tournament up a little bit, because we were predicting France to win it, you know, Ireland a little bit off the pace, some interesting results which we'll get into just now. But as the log stands after week two, Ireland are in pole position, France in second, England in third, Scotland fourth, Italy fifth, and Wales, well, they are last. Ronnie, let's take a look then. Italy 22, 15 Wales. What did you think of that fixture this weekend?
Well, no surprise. I think for either of us, we both called it. Wales is horrible at the moment. And last week, we pointed out the fact that it's not a case of inexperience. There are two teams that are more inexperienced and two teams that are younger than they are. And yeah, Italy didn't have a bad game last week. And now this weekend came against Wales and they were able to back it up. So I'm happy for the Italians. They deserved a good win for the fans at home. And they didn't.
So, I mean, this marks Wales' 14th defeat in a row. It gets a bit much repeating this, but their last win was against Georgia in the World Cup pool stages 2023. And now, after this defeat, Wales have dropped below Georgia in the world rankings, the lowest ranking Wales have ever had in 12th place.
Yeah, it sucks to be them. And it's just a strong side, you know, 2019 semi-final. They pushed the Springboks to the end. We've always struggled against Wales, so they've been a strong side. You know, they've won the Six Nations, something Scotland hasn't done, right? So Wales are a strong side, and to see them down and out like this, it's absolutely devastating.
It really is devastating. And, you know, when a team has lost that many games in a row, that change room must be morbid. You must sit there and wonder, you know, what can we do to change this? What can we do to turn it around? And then you go out there, and there's just nothing from the boys. You've got guys putting on big performances here and there, but no team effort or team push to get it. And arguably, this was their shot in the Six Nations to avoid the wooden spoon. Italy, okay, they were away. Italy did beat them last year, but this is surely one that they had written up on the board there. This is the fixture we're going for. This is the team we absolutely have to beat. This is the line. And to then come up short like that against Italy it's really, really, really terrible for Welsh rugby, and they've slipped. You called Scotland a minnow nation masquerading as a tier one. What do we call Wales then?
Yeah, look, Wales definitely makes Scotland look very good. I just want to make clear, I love Scotland, right? So I'm not hating on them, but it's about time they do something and win. But yeah, Wales, I don't know what's going on. I don't know how to change it. I think actually what they've done, we mentioned it now, Warren Gatland out, let's get someone else with a new plan in there. Because we can agree, it is not inexperience, it is not youth, that's the problem. It's, you know, maybe Welsh Rugby Union is just rotten to the core. The structures are failing. Their domestic sides haven't done all too well over the years. So, yeah, maybe it's not just Warren Gatland that needs to go, maybe it's more.
So before we delve into the Gats being let go, mutually agreed to part, whatever they want to call it, this game was an interesting one for me because it was wet weather, but Italy had one line break in this game and Wales had two. You know, that's a hectic stat. When I looked at that, I was like, okay, this is an interesting one. But what that says to me is this was a game that was there for the taking from either side. Yes, Italy built up a lead in the first half. Wales could have come from behind and taken it in the second. But actually, it came down to Tommaso Allan and his kicking game for the Italians, getting five penalties, one conversion. That proved the difference. It wasn't that Italy were attacking so well and ran Wales off the feet. It wasn't that Italy were defending so well that Wales couldn't make a break. It literally came down to almost a single player doing their job properly in terrible conditions. And Wales just could not get that right even.
No, Wales couldn't get out of, you know, look, there were glimpses of a bit of momentum from them, something positive, a positive play, front football, and then, you know, the things just, they couldn't string together enough of those periods, and ultimately, the Italians, like you say, having a quality kicker like Tommaso Allan, fantastic, yeah, I think he missed two kicks, I know of two, I don't know if there was a third one maybe, but still, he kicked enough to you know, it was never really in doubt for me that Italy were going to win, right? They felt comfortable and relaxed throughout that game. And I'm happy, let's be honest, it's not just that Wales are bad. Italy, I'm happy. They played really well and we must give them all the credit.
So, Ronnie, then on to Warren Gatland departing Wales. He was the head coach and had a good stint with them, winning two Grand Slams, a couple of Six Nations tournaments, and, you know, very hailed when he came back from New Zealand to replace Wayne Pivak, who had been his assistant coach. Gats has now gotten the boot, mutually parting with Welsh rugby. They have three fixtures left in the Six Nations. Matt Sherratt, the Cardiff Blues coach, is stepping up only for the three games remaining in the Six Nations. He will coach them through that, saying he won't put his name forward to coach the team thereafter. So in that context, Ronnie, firstly, was this a knee-jerk reaction to fire a coach in the middle of the season?
It's 14 games lost on the trot, like the writings on it was on the wall by the seventh straight loss, right? That at some point, if this carried on, the coach would have to get the axe. And we've seen that from many teams in the past. So it really can't be a surprise. The fact that they did it now and not at the beginning of the Six Nations, I find that a bit strange. Like, why not make the change at the beginning of the season? Did Warren Gatland promise something and they were hoping to see something would happen after the first two rounds and it didn't materialize, and that's why he left? But yeah, look, I'm sure there's a whole bunch of politics that we'll never be aware of, and it's a shame, really. I feel sorry for Warren Gatland, but I think it's also about time, right? Like, really, 14 games on the trot after a very proud rugby nation that's been quite successful over the years to be where they are now, it's a real shame.
Yeah, so we say 14 games on the trot, it's about time that he got the boot, but you look at Sherratt coming in there now, he's saying he'll only take it for three games. Do they have a long-term solution? Because you've now fired a coach who does have somewhat of a proven track record. Yes, the results at the moment are shit. But who's going to replace him? Who's actually going to throw their hat in that ring? And I've seen them say Michael Checker. I've seen them say Ronan O'Gara. I've seen there be talk of Easterby, who's currently in charge of the Irish. But do they want that role?
It's you can look at it two ways, right? It's the sort of, you can't get any lower, you can't get any worse, right? So you can only go up. Or number two, you can say it's a really terrible side of you, and if you continue with him, you're going to get terrible results as a coach. But yeah, look, it's a blank page, right? It's a blank slate to go and apply a trade with an international side with lots of history. I personally think there'll be an Australian that takes over there. It's a couple of good Australian coaches, head coaches that are no longer head coaches, and that could fit that role.
Yeah, I'm predicting we're going to see Ronan O'Gara take the Wallabies job, so I'm ruling him out of the Welsh one. I do agree with you.
What about a Joe Schmidt?
I think Schmidt doesn't have an appetite for coaching anymore. He would have sort of seen the Wallabies through to the end of the World Cup, personally. Okay. I could be very, very wrong. But Ronnie, quick, yes or no, on the spot question. If Wales win their next game, was Gatland the problem?
No.
There we go. Just wanted to get that on the record. I agree with you. One game doesn't prove anything. Over to Twickenham or Allianz, because they have to be different. The English getting a 26-25 point win over the French. Many, many tears from Les Blues in England. Greatest game we've seen from the greatest rugby player of all time as well, hey? 13 knock-ons from the French in that game. 30 turnovers. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, I don't know what was going on there. It was a lot of handling errors, a bit of pressure that got to them. But look, England also, they scrambled really well and they ultimately pulled off the win that they stole that win, right? So had they not got that try in the death or a couple of good scrambles here and there throughout the game, they would have lost it and we wouldn't really be mentioning the French handling errors. We got this both wrong. I think I backed France. I thought France would take it, not comfortably though, but I thought that they would still take it. So for me, very exciting game. I don't really like the English, right? Sorry to any English listeners yet, because we're just all raised to not like the English. They haven't done anything wrong, right? They're still great. I'm sure they're a great bunch of people. We're just bred to not like them. But I still found myself supporting them.
Yeah, that's a funny position most South Africans found themselves in this weekend, because we don't like supporting the English. We never have, but France gotten a little bit too big for their britches. And now you find many of us shouting for the English in this one. But I think this is probably a moment that I need to own up, because in the beginning of the season of this podcast, I said England were going to be one of the worst teams in the Six Nations. I said that they were going to finish probably at the bottom, fighting Wales out for it. And I said that France were going to win this one by at least 23 points. So England served up some proper humble pie on me here. But even more than that, when the England team sheet came out, I then came out and said, well, pretty stupid from Steve Borthwick to drop Freddie Stewart. You know, he's so under the high ball. The game.
But Marcus Smith at 15.
Yeah, but then the game starts and I'm going, well, look, there we go. We've got DuPont and Jalibert pumping kicks downfield to put Marcus Smith under pressure. Smith knocked one or two of them on. And then I'm like, okay, but shit. He's also not put Freddie Stewart on the bench. That's even more stupid. Lo and behold, Elliot Daly on the bench comes out of nowhere in the 79th minute with a hell of a run, seals victory for England. And Finn Smith, in his first test start for England, gets the winning conversion over. So, Ronnie, what do you make of all of that action?
Well, I'd like to make an argument. I don't know how well other people, I don't know. I sometimes come with ridiculous statements. But I like Marcus Smith at 15. I really enjoy him at 15. I think same reason I like Beauden Barrett at 15 is an extra couple of seconds on the ball makes Marcus Smith a lot more exciting and dangerous.
As soon as you started talking, I knew we were going to the Beauden Barrett debate. It feels like we're four seasons back in the podcast now going, I know Beauden with a little bit extra time on the ball. I do not see Marcus Smith as a long-term solution at 15. I don't think
and that's fine. I welcome you saying that. I welcome everyone saying that. But one day you're all going to be like, yes, he's actually much better at 15 than he was at 10. And that moron Ronnie, that idiot Ronnie from that stupid podcast, that stupid guy, he was right. I'm going to say I told you so.
Yeah, I don't think that's coming at all. I feel very comfortable in that. I think they've got some good options at 15. I've been wrong about
any Marcus Smith
so far.
Bring Owen Farrell back, play him at 10, and put Marcus Smith at 15, and you'll see that England side decimate people.
Well, what do you make of Finn Smith's first start? So he's played 7 games off the bench. This was his 8th test cap and first start. It was the weekend of young 10s, and we'll get on to Pendergrass just now. But I thought Finn Smith had quite a good game, and, you know, he got kicks over when Marcus Smith had already missed 3. That, for me, places Marcus Smith's position in the starting team at risk a little bit because he's not there for his kicking, and you've got a fly half that gelled well at the weekend with Alex Mitchell, who last week everyone was hating on, and this week is the hero of the English team. You know, where does that leave all the Smiths?
So what you're saying is Marcus Smith shouldn't be playing fly half, he should be playing fullback.
No, that's what you're saying, Ronald. Don't get confused.
Okay, all right. No, look. Regarding Finn, I think he should not be allowed to play for England, or he should change his name because there's way too many Finns in the English side.
Finns or Smiths?
Well, both. Finns and Smiths. I mean, Finn Baxter scored a bloody try, came with his baby face, but massive, massive stature, scored a bloody try, and that's another Finn that was there. There's just too many Finns on that side.
It's a little too much for Ronnie to comprehend, eh? That's all right. We'll help you through it throughout the season, Ronald. So that game for me was quite a turning point for England because at least the last 18 months we've spoken about how they've failed to finish the last 20 minutes of a game. We spoke last week about their bench and Borthwick not paying enough attention to who he was selecting onto the bench. This week we saw the experience in Daly. We saw Jamie George selected there, adding a bit of experience. And I think that came to the fore when they managed to close out the game at the end. The lead changed 3 times in the last 10 minutes. And for me, handling that pressure is a good sign for a team that's on the rise.
Yeah, look, I don't know. What was the halftime score? Was it 7-all or something? Something quite low and even. And then there was that first half of the second half was slow. And then that last 20 minutes, that last quarter was fantastic rugby. Back and forth, like you say. How many times did it change the lead? It was a very exciting game. And both sides, I think, deserve to win that game. But ultimately, England a little bit more because they were a little bit desperate. I think they were gutful. They were gutful of being punched in the face repeatedly and everyone hating on them and all the negativity surrounding the side. And they just went ahead and they won. And that was good to see. It's exciting. It's good for world rugby to have a good, strong England so that we can all start hating them collectively again.
Well, they somewhat blew the Six Nations open with that victory. And if France can go over to Dublin and get the W, well, then the Six Nations could be anybody's at this point. Scotland not even out the race as it goes so far. Ronnie, DuPont and Jalibert, they did not have a cracking game together. There was a lot of miscommunication there. DuPont late in the game moving to 10, an experiment that didn't really pay off for me.
So do you think, based on Jalibert's antics and all of that, do you think his position in the team is on ice again or is at risk?
Yeah, for me, I would have gone with Ramos at 10. I feel like that would have probably been the good one. Look, Bielbieri also had a shocker this weekend on the wing, so I think it was an off weekend for the French. He did score, but let's be honest, that was not the quality player we're used to seeing.
I like Bielbieri. And I think he's so young that he can afford to still make mistakes. But yeah, I hear what you're saying. Maybe the 19 combination didn't work. Some other combinations weren't gelling quite as hard. It was, like we've said already, lots of handling errors, which just breaks a team's momentum. And the handling errors in crucial points of the field, which just allowed England to, you know, after unsuccessfully capitalizing on a penalty or something, you know, they got back into it after a knock-on by France. So France left that door open for England, and rightfully England took their chances.
Yeah, I think just to annoy some of our French listeners a little bit, I'll leave this as the last note on this game, but it's...
Croissants are horrible.
That too. But also, it's amazing how the GOAT looks so pedestrian behind a forward pack that's not generating front football, eh?
I mean, come on. Has he... We're all giving him a lot of crap about being the GOAT and then making mistakes. But he's never come out personally and been like, I am the GOAT. It's us as fans that are saying that. You know, well, we're hating on a guy that's actually done nothing wrong.
You're using us a little too colloquially there for me, Ronnie.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. You guys, not us. You guys.
Ronnie, then over to Sunday's fixture. Scotland going down at home, 18 points to 32 for Ireland. Scotland's 11th straight loss in a row to the Irish. They really have them figured out at the moment. Let's just start. We were talking about Finn Smith, a 10, a young 10. Sam Pendergast had a cracker this weekend as well. To me, he looks like a skinny version of John Sexton, if I'm honest with you. But how about that 20-meter pass from him for that opening try?
No, absolutely. And so you would you like to say there's obviously been a shift in his mindset from last week to this week, because you were very critical of him in the first week and now you're singing his praises. So what do you think happened there? Someone have a chat with him?
Yeah, I think probably settling a little bit more. He was more comfortable in this game. I have to give him credit. He did run that Irish backline much more this weekend, maybe a little bit less pressure on him. And maybe if I look at it under the context of England having now beaten France, maybe he was under much more pressure from that English loose trio last weekend than I realized when I first watched the fixture. But I thought he had a good performance, and I was quite impressed with him. What did you make of him, Ronnie?
Yeah, I think Ireland have found their Johnny Sexton 2.0 is what I think about it. I think he's a good player. He's young, so he's got a long way to go, and he's going to make mistakes. But he's got really incredible players around him, both at 9 as well as at 12. And, you know, he's got quality players just throughout the Irish side. So, you know, they can definitely pick up where he falters. So, yeah, it's good for him. But just getting back to the game, really sad for Scotland.
Yeah, it was a really sad one to see Scotland go like this. So let's take a look at the 6-2 curse that seems to hit the Northern Hemisphere sides as they copy old Dr. Erasmus from the South. Because in this fixture, Scotland went for the 6-2. And then lo and behold, about the 20th minute, we had Finn Russell and Darcy Graham decide to snipe one another out of the game. Big head collision there. Hope Darcy's doing all right. He was stretched off the pitch. But yeah, suddenly you've lost two backs and two very influential backs at that. You've got Duane van der Merwe with a yellow card. You know, that puts a lot of pressure on a Scottish side that does not have that much depth as is, forcing them to rejig. You know, they couldn't place Blair Kinghorn at 10 after that because they're now missing a wing as well. I think that threw a huge spanner in the works, Ronnie. Is it a depth issue for Scotland in this game, or is it that just that Ireland has their number?
Yeah, look, Ireland's a tough side to beat, to play against, and then to be expected to beat them. Right, they're second in the world. A lot of people will claim that they're actually number one in the world. They've beaten the world champs. So yeah, it's a tough one for Scotland to expect them to do that. But with that said, like, you know, I genuinely felt that in my heart, I thought, gee, this is going to be it. The Scottish are going to do it. I thought that they had a good start to the Six Nations. It wasn't great against Italy, but they would have learned from that. They would have known what worked and what didn't work, and they would have done much better against the Irish. But unfortunately, that wasn't the case. I'm really disappointed, and I really expected more from them. But I've learned my lesson here now. Scotland are a Minnow nation, and I don't like that.
Yes, you're going to get some hate mail this week, Ronnie. You can put that down as my prediction for this one.
Okay, all right. I'll be honest with you. I love Scotland. I want them to do really well, and they do. They are, honestly, I think they're probably my favorite Northern Hemisphere side, and I want them to do well. But got to win a Six Nations, man. Now, come now. Now's the time.
Look, one of our regular listeners to the show, Sebastian, you are there in Scotland behind enemy lines. Please profusely apologize for Ronald's behavior on the show if you're listening this week.
Right. I have a feeling that the Scottish fans will agree with me that it's enough's enough.
Enough's enough. Well, Ronnie, I think we also need to give a shout out to the Scottish medical team. There's been loads of focus on head injuries of late. Finn Russell passing his HIA, but the Scottish doctor intervening and saying, no, you're not going back on the pitch. You're not right. You took a hell of a knock. Let's put player safety first. I thought that was great to see and definitely worth a bit of praise. But for me, the Scotland team, you know, they loaded the bench. They wanted the forwards to come on and make this impact. Yes, losing the backs caused a bit of chaos with that. But, you know, Jack Dempsey came on. He injected some physicality into the game, but it was too little too late. And it's one player of the six. It didn't uplift the whole tempo of the game. He got 15 carries when he came off the bench, which is a huge contribution. But when you go for the 6-2 split, you expect the six forwards to come on and make a combined, complete change on that game. And the Irish guys didn't seem to take their foot off the pedal when that happened.
Yeah, it's disappointing, right? But it's still nice to see the teams employing the 6-2. I quite enjoy it. I know when games like this happen and backs get injured and there's suddenly a bit of chaos and everybody's sweating a bit, it makes it interesting to watch. But yeah, you're right. Ireland, we've got to sing their praises, right? So they were able to hold off any sort of Scotland advance, and it's, yeah, well done. All credit to them.
Yeah, it was interesting to see, because as much as we praise Ireland, I've seen many people rating their game quite poorly in this one, you know, that they didn't manage to put the Scots away as well as they would have liked, giving Ireland a bit of a 6 out of 10 rating for their performance in this game. Is that not doing Scotland justice enough, or was Ireland really just not playing to their full potential?
I think we have to accept this. I don't have to say what?
Don't say the word Minnow again, Ronald.
You said it. No, I think Ireland is a quality side, and to play at a 6 out of 10 and still come away with a win over Scotland, over a Scottish side that I think is actually pretty damn good. Some quality players, see me backtracking there, complimenting the Scots. No, look, Ireland, they deserve that win. To get rated at a 6 out of 10, you know, people expect better from them. They expect excellence because of how strong Ireland actually is now. So, yeah, that's the reality of that.
So, Ronnie, Scotland was 17-0 down. They claw themselves back to 17-11, and the game was somewhat in the balance there. And I think that shows the experience from Ireland to, you know, stay calm, add the points on the board, build that scoreboard pressure again, and then just run away with it.
Yeah, I mean, you at 17-0, the WhatsApp group got a little bit loud. Two members there, you and old Liam, got a bit loud. And then 17-11, I heard that messages just stopped coming. Right. So you guys were obviously thinking to yourselves, oh, maybe Ronnie was onto something here. It wasn't to be. I was happy at that stage. I was waiting for a Scottish win. But yeah, look, well done, Scotland, for going back into the game against a very, you know, difficult conditions against Ireland. But yes, come on. Next time we want you to take a full 83 minutes and win the game.
So, a player like Duan Fundamova, we see him get a yellow card in this game. Then he comes back and scores a stellar try. You know, silly card that he got there for the push on the Irish winger. Something like that does not need to take place in a game of this nature. And, you know, I was talking about it with Candice when we were watching the game and saying, you know, you look at a player like this, how much are they contributing to the game? Does that yellow card hurt their overall stats? But penalties and cards for silly incidents like that for me, just it's a waste in a game like this.
Yeah, look, when you're in a try-saving, a try or no-try situation, you know, that's pretty intense and something's going to happen and you have to do something and you have to make a split-second decision and you do it and yeah, you go away. But did it cost Scotland a try? I don't know. I can't exactly recall the moment of the game. May have been a try not too long after that, but I don't think that directly resulted in a try being scored. And those are the sorts of decisions you make in a split second. It's a very dynamic game. Lots of collisions happening, lots of collision points, and you've got to make a decision. And I mean, look, you were a front row. You don't understand these sorts of things, right? As eighth men, you know, we were often involved in this as well as what the front row was doing. You know, we were doing it all. That's just what we were doing. So, you know, I had to make these decisions a lot myself, but fortunately I was good enough to not get carded.
There we go. I was just about to say, it sounds like the opinion of a dwarf eighth man, but yeah, we'll leave it at that, hey, Ronald. And I think a huge shout out has to go to, you know, and let's end off talking about this game with Kian Healy, a front rower, Ronnie. That must really grind you. So Kian Healy won his 66th cap in the Six Nations this weekend. He has now surpassed Brian O'Driscoll's record of 65. Big shout out to the big man up front. We all know that props are the cleverest, best looking, you know, most influential players on the pitch at any given moment. Ronnie, that's enough on the Six Nations. If we go over then to the weekend, there was also some URC action in the North versus South Derby. Stormers going down at home to the Blue Bulls, 32 points to 33. Another one pointer at the weekend. 7 wins from 9 games for the Bulls, while Stormers suffer their 6th defeat in 10 games. What do you make of this one?
Yeah, I think we said in last week's episode that we both backed the Bulls. I'm not sure, I can't recall exactly, but I'm confident we both said that. On Subaru, I backed the Stormers, and I blame that on the fact that this was part of a previous URC round, and so I made the prediction like 2 weeks ago, and it only materialized now. But yeah, look, the Bulls are a strong side, and they're in a good position in the URC, so they've got everything to play for, and the Stormers are being a little bit lax at the moment, and they need to step things up for sure. So Francois Abra made a comment, I think it was today, that, you know, there's still a long way to go to the final, but he's going to take every single game very seriously. And coming up to his 150th game for the Stormers, I have no doubt that he's going to give it everything and take every game seriously.
So I know you want us to just brush over what you've just said after you called me out for being a liar on the Scotland game. But here, Ronnie is, oh no, you know, we're also going to back the Bulls, and then you pick the Stormers on Super Brew. So nice try. Apparently you do this.
Again, I don't care if you believe me or not, but the intention and the understanding was that I had backed the Bulls, but because I made this call a long time ago and I had backed the home side, it just unfortunately went the other way. I was very disappointed when I opened my Super Brew and saw that I had in fact backed the Stormers, and I regret that. I still regret that to this day.
So for our new listeners, it's probably prudent for me to point out that when we started this podcast 3 years ago, Ronnie was a Sharks supporter. Then Ronnie left the Sharks and became a Bulls supporter. And now he can't even back the Bulls anymore and is calling for a Stormers win on Super Brew. So I don't know, that's some fence hopping. Hey, you might be triggering a certain American in a red cap.
I don't want to comment. I don't want to upset people. But the Sharks are like Scotland, let's be honest. I mean, you said it to me the other day. You agreed with me the other day. Like, the Sharks need us, and you start winning things now. They're way too good on paper to be performing the way that they are. But with that said, they're still in a very healthy position on the URC log. But yeah, I digress. Bulls, very good. I'm sorry I didn't back you. I was at all the intention in the world to back you.
So, I mean, this game's another example, though, of doing the basics properly, because the Stormers outscored the Bulls 5-4 in this game. And had they gotten their kicks, I mean, Yuri Mathi missing 3 kicks, they would have won. A lot of focus being placed on Clayton Blomacki's last-minute kick. He missed that. That would have handed the Stormers the win. A lot of ifs and buts in that. But yeah, you got to do the basics. You got to take the points that are on offer. Dobson will definitely be upset with that. And, you know, came back to bite them in the end.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. I forgot about that. Clayton's last-minute kick could have gone over. And most cases, you would actually back him to make that kick. And had it gone over, you know, well done to the Stormers and hard luck to the Bills. But yeah, it's unfortunate. I'm very happy for the Bills, right? So whatever is said and done, I'm really happy for them, and I want them to do really well, and I want them to top the UFC log.
Yeah, Ronnie, bold predictions there from that. But the Bulls now ended a 7-game losing streak against the Stormers in the URC, so they'll be quite happy about that. I was also quite interested to see Ville Leroux playing at fly half for the Bulls. I see Jack White saying he gave him some gray hairs in that one because Ville only wants the ball when Ville wants the ball.
No, and my dad said it. I think Ville was actually in the perfect position, position he wants to have been in his whole life, because he likes to talk and he's like a bloody Jack Russell, except he wasn't, he's too big to be a scrum off. So he liked being in charge there at 10. So I thought, yeah, I didn't think Philly had a terrible game.
Yeah, me neither. And I mean, the ball's coming away with a win. So Jake might be sticking with that while Johan Coulson's on the men. And then that's another game where I have to give a shout out to Cameron Hunnicorn, because he really is just rocking in good performance after good performance after good performance. And here was just another one from the big man at the back of the scrum.
Yeah, look, he knocked on quite a few balls and made a couple of mistakes here and there and still got out of the match. So, no, Hunnicorn is absolute class. So, well done to him. And ever since somebody pointed it out that he looks like Pierce Peace or plays like Pierce Peace, I can't unsee it. I mean, the guy is Pierce Peace. He is 100% plays like, looks like, feels like Pierce Peace.
Oh, well, there you go, Ronnie. So sticking to the URC then, this weekend we have another derby between North and South as the Bulls host the Sharks at Loftus. Kickoff is at 5 o'clock. I'm going to be there at that game, so I'm very keen to see that one. Apparently most of the Springboks are going to be playing other than all those that are injured at the moment. It's going to be a hell of a game because Bulls are third on the log, Sharks are fourth. The Sharks can't catch the Bulls with a win, even with a bonus point in this game. They'll still be 1 point behind. But crucial in terms of the side securing those home playoff spots.
Yeah, look, the Sharks, I expect a lot from them. There's everything to play for. Like we said, they're in, like you said, you want to be at the top of the log. You want to be in the top four when the playoff spots come and start getting securing some home fixtures where you can. And yeah, come on, Sharks. I believe in you, but I feel like the Bulls are the Sharks' bogey side. Right? They've just never done well. It goes all the way back to 2007 when Brian Abana stole the Super Rugby away from the Sharks.
Yeah, Ronnie, it's going to be an interesting one. So you're predicting a Blue Bulls win out of this one. I can sense that coming there. But, you know, I'm going to be in the stands. If they need to call me in, you know, I'll take my togs along, make sure that the Sharks get a win there.
Just speaking of teams that you think you can qualify for but will not, you realize I'm going to Germany, moving to Germany, and Germany still has a chance of qualifying for the World Cup, eh?
So are you trying to tell us all here that there's potential that Ronnie plays for Germany in 2027 in Australia?
You could say that.
Ronnie, you can have my house if you can qualify for that World Cup.
I really thought that would be a great investment.
Oh, Ronnie. Well, talking about qualifying for the World Cup, then onto some of the news from the week. So Portugal, Romania, Georgia, and Spain have all sealed up qualifications for the 2027 World Cup. They did that via getting semi-final berths in the European Rugby Championship. And that happened at the weekend as well. So great to see those sides continuing through. I mean, I know your influence in Spain last year that you spent there really spurred them to pick up their game and you know, really make sure that they were there in Australia. So well done, Ronnie. Shout out to you for that one.
No, thank you. Thank you. And look, thanks to my boys over there on the Iberian Peninsula, both Portugal and Spain. You know, I helped out there too because I was so close. I think some of my influence spilled over. And you're welcome.
Yeah, taking credit where credit's due, hey, Ronald. Then we also have Super Rugby starting up this weekend. So if any of the guys are keen to join us there, we've got a pool going. You can search us on Rugby Punted on Supergroup. All our various pools are there and just select the Super Rugby one. Like I always say, guys, another chance to come and join me and beat Ronnie up a little bit because he's really crap at this. Ronnie, the May Fokchom moment of the week. For me, it can only go to one. It's breaking of an English losing streak. It's putting the GOATS team out of contention for a Grand Slam. And that goes to Elliot Daly, coming off the bench, scoring the match winner for England right at the death of the game. I think that is the befitting of the May Fauchtel moment of the week.
And that's it for this week on the Rugby Punted. If you enjoyed the episode, smash that like button, subscribe, and join us again next week for more rugby insights, banter, and the right amount of cheers. Don't forget to join us on Super Brute 2, where we'll see who's got the best rugby predictions and who's just winging it.